Hey, it's me again, Greg Kelly. I've been doing too many other podcasts. I've neglected my own podcast because, as you may have heard, I've got a book. It's called Justice for All, How the Left is Wrong About Law Enforcement. Publishing date was January 10th. I've been relentlessly all over the place ever since. Some of the highlights have been President Trump endorsed the book, both pre-publication and a few days after it came out. Wonderful message on his Truth Social, and also, a statement from the 45th President of the United States office. Really appreciate that. I'll read that to you in a second. What else did I do? I was on the Mark Levin show, which is probably the best place a conservative can be to promote a book. Dan Bongino, Megyn Kelly, Sean Hannity, and a lot of others. Very, very grateful. And it's a little bit nerve-wracking, to be honest. I interview people, and I kind of just offer a lot of commentary, and it's a one-way conversation, to be honest, most of the time, and you never know what they're going to ask you. Oh, Bill O'Reilly, he was great. And who else? There are plenty of others. Forgive me. So grateful to all of them. The book has done well, and so much so that I think I'm going to be able to write another book. I'm very pleased about that. That's kind of what it's all about, really. More on that in a second. First of all, what the hell is up with that balloon? They're trying to say, number one, completely pathetic response. Completely pathetic. Joe Biden, to allow this to happen, this is something everybody can understand. This is not the International Monetary Fund policy. This is a damn Chinese balloon over America. And that, we can't have that. We just can't have that. Of course we can. And that it just lingered up there, floating along, and we knew about it a week prior. It's just totally outrageous. I think he is. He has no claim to be the leader of this country anymore. None. Not that he really had one. But when we all found out, I guess it was Thursday, it came out Thursday. It was like, okay, undeniable. Thursday, we all knew. And he had two events on Friday. He had something about the economy and then something about his just silly politics, some union confab in Philadelphia, just cheering himself, patting himself on the back. And we waited until this thing got over the Atlantic Ocean before shooting it down. Number one, I don't believe that it could not have been shot down without hurting people over the continental United States. I don't believe that. Number one, there are huge swaths of this country, which are sparsely populated. What else? You could have had multiple missiles fired at that thing at the same time, and they could actually track debris as it descended. So you could have pulverized that thing, and you also could have warned people to stay inside. Stay inside for the next 6 hours, northeastern Missouri, all right? We're going to blow something up. I think you would have had amazing cooperation from people on the ground. You can't have this thing. We look ridiculous now. And I do think it further confirms to me that Joe Biden is compromised. This is not the way a person only concerned about the United States would lead. Yeah, all right, you got to worry about the world in general and our relations with other countries. It's a damn balloon, for crying out loud. What? Who would blame us for taking that thing out? Joe Biden said he ordered it shot down on Wednesday. And he didn't tell us that until, I guess it was Sunday morning, where after it was confirmed that it was, okay, we got it. It's no big deal. We did it. Actually, it was Saturday. After the operation, that's when he claimed credit for ordering it, after it went well. Just an awful, awful display of non-leadership. I don't see how he can run for president again. If he runs, they must know that this damn thing is all rigged all over again. You can't have somebody with his, just the gaffes, the problems he has walking, I mean, everything. You can't have an 80, 81-year-old, 82-year-old guy like that. You can't. There are plenty of 82-year-olds who are fine. Mike Bloomberg, have you seen him? That guy's going to live to be 100. So I put out some pretty interesting material on social media. I told everybody that I was freaked out about the balloon, which I actually was to some degree. They could pull, I thought it might be an electromagnetic pulse bomb. You know about those things? It would fry every computer circuit in the country if you detonated one, say over North Dakota, which is basically the dead center of North America. You detonate one of those things, it's like a nuclear bomb, except without the blast. Just the EMP, the electromagnetic pulse. It would fry every circuit. No cell phone would work. No ATM, no credit card, no car. Nothing would work. No computer, nothing. We'd be essentially in the Stone Age. Yes, we'd have buildings and houses and stuff like that. The grid, we'd be plunged into darkness. And it looks like they have the technology to do something like that. And certainly, I feel like this is a dry run. We're in trouble. We're in serious trouble. Problems abroad and problems at home. But we're not hearing that much about the Memphis cops anymore. That kind of came and went pretty quick. What happened to Tyre Nichols was insanely brutal. I thought the guy, at one point, he's on the ground and the cops have swarmed him. And they're yelling at him and they're cursing at him and they're, do this, do that, do this. And he just said, you guys are saying a lot of stuff right now. I felt for him. I mean, yeah, how do you comply with all these guys yelling stuff? Some of it's contradictory. And I was shocked that he was able to get away. That was crazy incompetent on part of the cops, really. And then they beat him to death. They beat that man to death. Now I hear, and this would explain some things actually. There's an allegation that there might have been a lifestyle component and some sort of personal relationship between the cops, or at least one of the cops, and the deceased. Whether there was or there wasn't, there's no death sentence. If you dated the wrong person, or there's no death sentence if you resisted arrest either. You're not supposed to resist arrest. A lot do. Do we beat them to death? Do we shoot them just because they're resisting, putting up any kind of resistance? No, you subdue them. You got to wrestle with them. You got to do what it takes to get him in the cuffs. They couldn't do that for a long time. There's something really, really terrible. And that brings me to the book. It's about a year in the making. The hardest part, to be honest, is not the writing. It's it's all hard, to be honest. The outlining of it. I did it on big whiteboards with magnets and, you know, what issues I want to attack. And the way I've always written, by the way, my outlines can be 20, 30, 40 pages, and almost grisly enough, longer than whatever text it is I'm working on, which I've done before. I've been published in a couple of places, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and maybe that's it. Anyway, I had these big, gigantic whiteboards, and I put all my ideas on them. And what is this book all about? Justice for All, How the Left is Wrong About Law Enforcement. Well, the left has always been wrong about law enforcement. That's not new. But what is new in 2020, and there had been about 7 or 8 years where I started to see signs of this, 7, 8 years prior, where corporate America and, you know, mainstream institutions started kind of going all in, kind of this woke craze before we called it woke, putting their logo right up there with Black Lives Matter. and they had no idea what they were signing up for. Zero. You know, Black Lives Matter is a anti-family, anti-police, anti-prison, anti-America. It's pro-communist. It's pro-trans. I actually read what the hell they were talking about regarding the trans community. I couldn't understand what they're getting at. But Black Lives Matter is more trans than black lives, it seems to me. Some of the stuff that they've talked about. Hey, you can be trans, you can do whatever the hell you want when you're 18 and up, but obviously the country has lost its mind about that one subject. So, and you can be as radical as you want. You can have those views, okay, fine, whatever. But for the NFL to say, yeah, we're signing up with this, Procter & Gamble, Apple Computer to stand forward and say, to repeat the mantras of Black Lives Matter, for an Army general, Chief of Staff, General Milley, to come out and say Black Lives Matter, and then apologize for systemic racism. He pledges to fight, what the hell is it called again, unconscious bias. Unconscious bias is a junk science that has absolutely no place being discussed in the military. This guy shouldn't even be thinking about it, let alone speaking about it. And he came out and said all this crazy stuff as he was apologizing for Trump and the Bible in front of the church. A man with a Bible in front of a church was somehow the worst thing that anybody had ever seen. I was not offended by it. I mean, isn't that where you see the Bible? How dare he? Well, the next day, they threw Black Lives Matter, a Black Lives Matter banner in front of it, in front of that damn church. This is not right. I think a lot of people who went along with it know better. And what the society is going through now with this ludicrous focus on what people look like. I even hate that expression. I talk about it in the book. I want somebody who looks like me. I felt so empowered because the head of the organization finally looked like me. You know, I joined the military in 1991, and a big part of it, yes, my father, and I talk about him a lot in the book. The book is actually dedicated to him, and he is an amazing man, longest serving police commissioner in New York City history. I talk about the first time I ever saw him use a gun. I talk about how well he did his job. How when he left New York as the police commissioner in 2013, he had 75% approval. 75% approval rating. It didn't matter what ethnic group. This guy was universally hailed. And the city was racially harmonious. Really was. And they ruined it. They totally ruined it. Anyway, I went into the military because, in part, I really admired Colin Powell. I just thought he was fantastic. There are a couple of things that appeal to me about him. Number one, he was a White House fellow. He became a White House fellow, I believe, in the Nixon/Ford administration. And I knew about this program. I actually knew my father had applied for it in the 1970s. He was a semifinalist. It's a very competitive program, and to become a semifinalist, that was significant. He didn't get it, but I was aware of the program. It's kind of like a glorified internship program, but whatever. It's incredibly prestigious. You see government up close, and Colin Powell was a White House fellow. That was number one. Number two, I remember vividly when he was National Security Advisor under Ronald Reagan. That made an impression on me. I got to say, in part, because he was black and, quite frankly, nobody made a big deal out of that. I just thought this guy must be incredibly skilled and incredibly competent. You didn't get points back then for appointing people of color to these jobs. And I just knew he got there on the merits. And what else happened? When I was in college, and that was, by the way, when I was in high school into college, and I found out that this is after he became chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He went to City College in New York City, And he went to the same White Castle that I went to. And I just, he was a New Yorker. And I just thought, wow, that's that appealed to me. All right. It was the geographical connection and our affection for White Castle and a couple of other things. And I loved his, well, that came out later. But anyway, he's a, part of it is why I went into the military. And I, irrespective of race, and I just don't like that whole thing about somebody who looks like me, somebody who looks like me. We don't look alike. Nobody looks alike. That used to be racist, to assume that people of the same race look alike. I write about this in the book. I also write about how Barack Obama, at one point, was someone who was, well, he had the credentials, both professional and personal and racial, to get up and in 2008 to start talking about issues that nobody else really wanted to talk about, especially white politicians, because they couldn't. He talked about the problem of too many fathers going MIA and AWOL in the African-American community. He said it out loud. It's a problem in all communities, but nowhere worse than in the African-American community. And then, you know, he's worrying about telling people to... He said plenty of stuff in that famous Father's Day speech, talking about cold Popeyes, and you got to do better than that when you're feeding your kids. And some of that stuff would have been the kiss of death if it came out of a white politician's mouth. It was, I thought, an amazing moment, but he retreated. Jesse Jackson threatened to castrate him after he said it. And that was it. He blew it off. He wouldn't go there. He wouldn't stick his neck out. He never broke a sweat. He never broke. And what he did was fuel racial division in America. Now, he loved to point out that it's just a fact. It's just a fact that black and brown people are disproportionately stopped by police. That's just a fact, he would say. Well, what about the next fact? He never would say this part, that disproportionately black and brown people commit more of the crime. They commit crime more than white people, more than Asian people. It's just, that's a fact too. And if you were really leading and not triangulating and trying to enhance his own power and burnish his personal brand, he would have said the next part. And instead, he implied, if not just said out loud, that police were somehow racist, and this is a racist society, which it's not. I would submit, we know that, as he said in Dallas. We know that. It's amazing what people can achieve. It's amazing what they can do when they want to. Oh, by the way, including voting. This whole nonsense about black and brown people being disenfranchised. That's not true. There's no data to back that up. None. Zero. Black and brown people vote more than white people do when they want to. Look at the numbers of who voted for Barack Obama. However, he started losing support after he lost in 2008. Won in 2008. And then, but he lost black support over the next 3 years because nothing changed for them, even with a black president. And he saw his support drop, and he had to do something. And he teamed up with Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter came about in 2011 in the aftermath of the so-called murder of Trayvon Martin, and it wasn't a murder. George Zimmerman was defending himself. He was acquitted. He never should have been charged. And that's when Obama came out with the, if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon. Black Lives Matter helped the president gain re-election by stirring up grievance, false grievance, grievance where there should have been no grievance, because these numbers are so small. It's one of the reasons why the radical left, they're always pushing this thing, you know, say the name, Breonna Taylor, say her name. Why? Why do they do that? Because they have to personalize it, because the numbers themselves are infinitesimal. People, unarmed people getting shot by police, it's almost microscopic in the big picture. The Washington Post did some reporting on this. I cite the figures in my book. It's not a problem. It's not a problem the way they say it's a problem. Like Candace Owens, they do it for political power. The left, and they do it every election cycle. And it happened most effectively with George Floyd, 2020. But there's always one. I'm going to go into the book a little bit more later because I am actually needed down the hall to do something. So this is a quick one. Thank you very much. And thank you very much to D'Espresso Liber, the great people who created this amazing coffee company. A Green Beret started it a decade ago. He wanted the best coffee, and he found it. D'Espresso Liber coffee is 100% Arabica coffee, sourced from the finest coffee farms from around the world, and is roasted fresh in-house once they receive your order. D'Espresso Liber. Check them out. D'Espresso Liber. That's D'Espresso Liber, LIBER.com, D'Espresso Liber. And freedom does not brew itself. Many thanks, and I'll talk to you soon.